Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 97.9 The Wren. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here with us again on another Sunday. Today, we're going to talk about autism, and we're going to learn about autism from two representatives of the Virginia Institute of Autism here in Charlottesville. Our guests, Ethan Long. Ethan is the president and CEO of the VIA, and Hillary Nagel, admissions and family support services coordinator. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Rick.
So let's just dive right in. Ethan, I think the stereotype of autism can be distracting from the true definition. So can you start us off there? Define autism.
Sure. Yeah. And autism, Rick, it's actually, you know, the real technical term is autism spectrum disorder. And it really refers to a broad range of conditions that are characterized by like some key components and challenges. And those are challenges in social skills, in communication, speech and nonverbal communication, as well as repetitive behaviors. And that, you know, really is, you know, those are the hallmark like signs or symptoms of autism. And, you know, according to the Center for Disease Control, you know, just over the last few weeks, there was a study that was released that autism affects an estimated 1 in 44 children in the United States today, actually. So, you know, but the interesting thing I think about autism is that, you know, unlike COVID, where you can get a nasal swab test or a, you know, to test if you have the disorder, autism, there is no genetic test or blood test or nasal swab. It's really a behavioral observation-based diagnosis. So so that makes it a challenge for folks to describe it and to classify it at times. And so you need trained experts often to make that diagnosis.
There are multiple levels of the autism spectrum disorder, correct?
Yes. And so because autism is a spectrum disorder, and each person with autism has a distinct set of strengths or and challenges that, you know, they've come up with this level system. And I think that that kind of is helpful in sort of thinking about some of the needs or the supports that certain folks on the autism spectrum might have. So because you can have a person who's diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder, in some cases they may be living entirely independently. And then with others, they may need more like 24-hour, you know, trained support. So a level one person, they require some support, but these are folks that are often, it's autism spectrum disorder in its mildest form. And these folks are like what you might have heard or referred to as highest functioning autism or high functioning autism, or maybe having the Asperger's syndrome diagnosis. And these folks, you know, they may be living somewhat independently. They may have a job, but they may be experiencing frustration or challenges, you know, depression, social anxiety due to their autism. And then there's a second level of autism, level two, which is really requiring substantial support. So these folks, they may, you know, children at their level two, they may be able to go to public school and do math and science and reading, but they're still having a lot of challenges in their verbal and nonverbal communication skills. They may only want to talk about dinosaurs, or they may not really listen to the other students. And often they may be bullied, or they may be experiencing depression or high levels of social anxiety because of that issue. So their autism is at a level that's really, they require some more support and some help and assistance in building some of the skills they might need to overcome some of those challenges. And then there's a third level of autism. This would be autism spectrum disorder level three, which really requires very substantial support. And this level, if you have this type of autism, it's really characterized. Some folks, even The Lancet, which is a very prestigious medical journal, they just came out calling this profound autism, is they want to, is the way they described it. And in this level, you really are talking about severe challenges in social communication, as well as extremely inflexible behavior. And so, for example, children on this level, level three, they may have only one or two spoken verbal words. They may have lots and lots of repetitive ritualistic type behaviors. They may do a lot of hand flapping and body rocking. They may not really be paying attention to too many other folks or individuals that come into their personal space or in the room when they enter a room. And often some of these folks may have intellectual disability that's associated, that's comorbid with the autism as well. So they have some learning needs. And, you know, if you can only say or speak one or two words, you know, it's very hard to communicate your wants and your needs. And when you can't express yourself, you get frustrated. I mean, we all do when we, you know, but many of these children in particular may lash out. So they may have aggression, or they may have self-injury, or they may destroy property in the act of being frustrated because they can't communicate what they're trying to us. And so a lot of what we do here at the Virginia Institute of Autism, or VIA as we like to call ourselves, is really work to try to help build the skills of folks that are at that level three and level two autism spectrum disorder diagnosis or category.
Ethan, you mentioned one in 44 children are diagnosed with some form of autism, somewhere on the autism spectrum disorder. Do you or Hillary, are there other statistics or facts that, I mean, just the normal public is going to go, oh, wow, I had no clue?
Yeah, well, you know, often the signs of autism, so I think one in 44 is a pretty staggering stat. I don't know. I mean, back in the day.
It is, and that's why I asked this question, because one in 44 made me go, oh, wow, it seems like there's more to it than that, if you've blown my mind in the first few minutes.
Well, you know, and when I was training, I trained as a child clinical psychologist, and back 20 years ago, I literally had to go, and in order to see autism, I had to go to a special school and residential facility that was out in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and it was a school for children with autism that, you know, where folks came from all over to try to get the evidence-based services, treatment services they needed. So to see the numbers just increase so staggering, and part of that is, you know, our autism spectrum disorder diagnosis is now broadened a bit. So that has made the diagnosis more inclusive. But, Rick, where the rubber hits the road here at VIA, we're getting way more referrals for supports and services and families needing our help. And I know, you know, Hillary sits on that, you know, on the forefront of that. But clearly there's much more need for help and support out there. You know, the other thing about autism, a stat that I often think about, you know, because it's a behavioral observation that's required to make the diagnosis, often the signs of autism, they're usually appearing around the child's first word, spoken word. And often, it, you know, some folks, you know how normal development is. If you have kids, you know that sometimes, you know, not all of them develop as particularly on time. So usually the diagnosis comes around age two or three. But we can actually make that diagnosis even earlier, as early as 18 months in some cases. And I know, you know, almost all healthcare and educators and healthcare professionals, you know, we all agree at this point, you know, that early intervention really leads to the best outcomes in life for folks with autism. So the earlier we can diagnose and then get evidence-based treatments to folks, the much more success we're going to have with folks.
Again, as we talk about autism today and the autism spectrum disorder with Ethan Long and Hillary Nagel from VIA, the Virginia Institute of Autism. Hillary, jump in here. I want to talk about some of the day-to-day challenges that a family faces when dealing with someone with autism, because they're not just children anymore.
Yeah. So I think it's important to note that I believe families have different challenges that present itself really uniquely within that family system. It's kind of a tapestry of sort of those challenges and celebrations. But it is one of the things that that we look at here at VIA is a real holistic support when we look at supporting the whole family system, because it doesn't just impact that individual with the ASD diagnosis. It really does impact the whole family system. Here at VIA and families that we work with in the community really talk a lot about just some of the significant challenges that they experience with their loved one. An example is sleep issues or disturbances, where families can describe how difficult it is to kind of get through the night with their loved ones. They're often getting up at night, exploring whatever they have access to, kind of unaware many times of those health and safety needs. So they're accessing things like uncooked food in the refrigerator, spices, condiments, things like that, or attempting to get up and cook in the middle of the night. Again, not having the skills to get through the full sequencing of cooking food properly, but are doing their best to try that. And certainly we work with many families as well that share the challenges of their loved ones eating non-edible objects, so like paint flakes and things in cushions and things like that. So it's just, it's the myriad of challenges. I think one of the things that we look at is many of our folks that we serve do not always understand, again, the safety. And so they might, a term we use is they elope or they bolt. And they're getting curious to explore things like the neighborhood or a neighbor's pool or attempting to walk to the store in the nighttime because they want to access a treat. Again, not really understanding all the safety, health and safety needs that come along with those skills. So I think what we, again, look at is to really figure out what's unique about that situation and the uniqueness that we need to do to support the family. So it might be helping them to work, and we do this here, as you know, kind of working on sleep training strategies, exploring funding to secure their home so that it's safe, that the individual isn't wandering out, monitoring devices so that they do wander, that we have an ability to find them quickly with law enforcement. And I think it's important, again, that we look at really supporting the parents to cope with these really difficult situations that you can imagine how it feels not to feel like you can sleep well through the night because you're so anxious and worried about what an individual might do in the evening. And so families at VIA that we serve do talk about kind of pretty extraordinary circumstances where they might put a mattress in the hallway so that they can be aware when somebody wakes up, or they might need to sleep with their children or feel a need to sleep with their children. So again, that they're able to keep that individual safe in the night. So those are some examples of some things that are pretty frequent that we hear about. Again, each has its own unique flavor to it, but again, it's that commitment to really looking at the family system very uniquely and individually to help figure out how do we support, how do we help these families learn the skills, and that there might the skills to develop the skills, safety skills might take time, but it, again, would necessitate safety first. So we're going to try to really think and strategically help equip that home to be safe for that individual.
Yeah. And if Hillary, if I could, and Rick, one of the things I'm very, proud of VIA for is the focus on the family. But of course, we also like really work with that individual, child or student or even the adult. You mentioned the adults, because, it is true that the, you don't outgrow autism. Autism is something that folks will have with them. It's a lifelong disorder. So, but we can help build skills and you know, of course, obviously, our program is designed to really focus on addressing the core deficits of autism or those challenges that most folks with autism experience. So we're going to be teaching communication skills. We're going to be teaching, you know, social skills. So, you know, one of the issues, and then we'll be teaching, you know, the basic of safety and academics and how to take care of yourself and how to live more independently. And our focus is on the individual with autism, whether that's a student, whether that's a client, whether that's an adult. But we also then want to really look beyond that. And Hillary does a wonderful job of that. And as she's describing, because so many of these issues, if you can't communicate to your parents that you want to get up and get something to eat, you may go off and do that in a way that is dangerous. And so we have to work with the families to better understand how to, and we need to work with that individual child to teach them how better to communicate to the family. This is what I want. And so we really work individually with each and every one of our students, our clients, to really try to bring out and get that communication and language ability going to really work on their individual issues. And we look at sort of their strengths as well and think about how can we use their strengths to sort of capitalize to really bring out, you know, the best in these folks and then sort of share that with the family so that they can really become the teachers and the therapists and they can really help their loved one with autism really succeed to the best extent possible.
Do you have a specific success story? And I'm not asking for family last names, but we've heard the process and the things that need sleeping, putting the mattress in the hallway and methods that have been made to happen or could be used. But where's the charming success story that's going to make me smile?
Right. Well, I've got one now for you that if you don't mind if I share, and I don't, Hillary, you probably have a hundred bunch of them too. I mean, this is why we love working at VIA, right? Because every day you're making positive changes in the lives of the folks we're serving, and you get to see them. I've got one, a little boy. I'll call him Jeff. That's not his real name, but he came to us. He was about 5 years of age when he came to us. And I will tell you, this little guy was a level 3. So he had a lot of needs. He only had one spoken word. He was running around our gymnasium. And I'll tell you, Rick, he had one word. He was going everywhere. We had 3 teachers working with him. And he was scratching at these teachers. And he was clearly distressed. And we were offering him anything and everything he wanted when he came to us day one. We were, you know, do you want to look at the iPad? Do you want something to eat? Do you want anything? And literally, he literally ran over to a glass door and took his head and just banged it on the glass door. I thought for certain he was going to have to go to the emergency room. Thankfully, he didn't cut himself. But it was just so scary and to see this child so debilitated. And, of course, the parents were just absolutely exhausted from having to try to keep him safe. And I'll tell you that this morning he shared, he the other morning when I was at work, he was now working. He's now 18 years old. He has a full communication system. Now, his communication system is a little different than yours and mine. He uses an iPad to type in some words that then kind of communicate his wants and needs. But he's able to communicate that. He completely can understand any directions that you might give to him or if you want to talk with him. Ask him how he's doing. Jeffrey, how are you today? You know, he can type, you know, I'm having a wonderful day or I'm not doing so hot. He actually served me my coffee the other day because at our new Center for Adolescent and Adult Autism Services, we have a cafe where we're training skills to teenagers who are able to then, you know, our goal is to get them out there and employed. And he actually took my cafe, you know, my latte order and, you know, made me a latte and told me to have a great day today. And you know, we're hearing from his family that he's actually able to read. He's now able to take, you know, time to just be by himself and the family doesn't have to, you know, constantly be watching him. He no longer has that explosive, those aggressive behaviors because he's now able to express himself using a method that's a little different, but it works for him and it works for his family and it works for his community. And that ultimately is what it's all about for us. We're really trying to give these kids a way in which they can better express themselves, they can really connect and learn, and then the learning process. And, you know, here this little guy is, and now he's an older guy, he's a teenager, but he's clearly at a place where, you know, we think he's going to have an opportunity to really enjoy a job someday in a much more independent life.
Ethan Long, President and CEO of VIA, Virginia Institute of Autism. Hillary Nagel here with us as well, Admissions and Family Support Services Coordinator. We'll be right back learning more about autism. And here we are talking about autism and the autism spectrum disorder with our guest today, Hillary Nagel, Ethan Long from VIA. You can check out the website at viacenters.org and read some really nice blog articles and all about the programs, services. You can donate if you feel that that's important to you. I'd like to ask, and Hillary, I'll toss this your way, but Ethan, step up if this is for you. I know that this year and the year before in this public school system were very difficult because of mask wearing. A lot of students worked virtually, whether by choice or by force in the public school system. I'm curious about the challenges that those sorts of things presented towards the student, the autistic student, and the families, both in virtual learning and for mask wearing.
Ethan, chime in as well, but I think one of the things that we heard pretty consistently was that when this model was pivoted, where kids were back home, that parents were really thrust into a situation that they were providing full-time care, full-time education, and parenting in a way in which really impacted their work life, family life, and their mental health. It was very, very challenging to have families working hard on skill development along with managing the day-to-day needs of the family. So we at VIA really pivoted as early as we could to create an opportunity to get our students back in. But one of the things that was interesting that we really did hear was a lot of families were so impressed with what they learned about their own loved one. So I heard repeatedly how many times families are like, we figured this out, and felt really successful in many, many ways of learning with the coaching. So we did a lot of coaching through video and strategies, but it really did, it was rough for sure for many families, but I think at the other end of it, many families had shared that they really learned and had a new appreciation for the skills and strengths of their loved ones, and also had the support of the coaching side by side. But as I said, as a school and as an organization, we really did pivot as quickly as we could to create a safe an environment to be able to get kids back, because we knew that face-to-face was so critical for many, many reasons, to support the family, to support the learner's education, and to continue to develop the skills that they deserve to have. So it's been challenging, but we've really worked hard to work on desensitization skills and really helping coach the family on strategies that they can do at home as well to try to build up those skills. But it's certainly been challenging.
Yeah, I remember the date, March 13th, you know, where the governor, Friday the 13th, that the governor said there could be no more in-person schools. And for us, we knew that that was going to be very challenging, because so many of our students, our clients, our adults, they really need that, you know, intensive staff expertise on the front lines, helping them, visual learners, you know, folks that really need to see and model and practice and kind of, you know, learn new skills, and they need to be in person. So we were one of the first school programs to open back up in person. We opened back up in July 1st, you know, so just 4 months after the closure, and we put up tents and we went through so that we could have physical distancing. Everybody was wearing masks. We, you know, we started to teach our students how to wear masks. We started to teach our clients how to wear masks. Our staff were all wearing masks. And then, you know, as quickly as we could, we got all of our staff and our older adults and students vaccinated. We are happy to say we've got about a 98% vaccination rate now, rate across the organization. And then as our little ones got back, we were able to get, you know, more recently, we've been able to start the vaccination clinics here so that our little ones are getting vaccinated as well, our younger clients and students. And so, but it is an incredible challenge for the families, and kudos to our staff who really, you know, did the best they could by contacting families daily and working with their, you know, the students from home remotely. It's necessary, but not quite sufficient. And so getting them back in person to the extent we could was really much appreciated by all the families and our school district partners. And that was quite a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think we noticed as well, it was just unique challenges. We work with 14 area school districts across Virginia. Mm-hmm. So the technology needs were so varied among our families that we serve. So we were really trying to think outside the box. So it really helped us to think more creatively in how we deliver services. And there were definitely times where we would meet up in parks and support the family in that way with some coaching strategies in the safest way we could. And then again, just lots of practical pieces that were really important to pay attention to of just, again, how families were doing. So a lot of time spent just as much checking in on the family and how they were managing and letting them know that they weren't alone, but that this community is still here to support them, even though we knew it was going to be really challenging. And then practical things of food and getting out masks to households, things that, you know, early on were significant that everybody was struggling to find. So, but when you have a child with a pretty significant disability, it's hard to grocery shop. It's hard to get into the community. So we were really excited to be able to stretch in the ways in which we provide services to support families.
And maybe, yeah, if I could, Hillary, maybe one of the silver linings is that, you know, we took what we learned, and particularly around how we share, you know, how we got our students ultimately to be wearing masks. And we were contacted by Albemarle County Public Schools, and they were finding that it was really challenging just to have some of their students with autism or special education students, but also some of their regular student population was having some challenges. And so we were able to produce, using some of our clinicians' expertise, a video that with Albemarle County's blessing and their assistance as well, and some of their clinicians and educators' input. And we were able to create a how-to video, which was really terrific. And we shared that completely all across Albemarle County. And, you know, really trying to help, you know, so taking sort of the silver lining is, you know, taking what we've learned from this very, you know, difficult situation and then being able to share that with the rest of our community so that folks with autism in our community that maybe aren't using bioservices but still could benefit and others as well. And we've been able to sort of, you know, get better. I mean, another silver lining, I think, is that we are closer to the families we serve now and we have better connection. And we're everybody knows how to use Zoom and how to do Google Meets and video chats and conferences. And so we're trying to take the best of a very difficult time. And that's a credit, I think, to our staff and community.
Both of you have mentioned bioservices, but we haven't really mentioned specific services here. So what are some of the services that VIA provides, and are there services that VIA doesn't provide or can't provide that might be elsewhere in the community, or services that are unique to VIA?
Yeah, big question. I'll just start, and if it's okay, because we're in our 25th year and we're a nonprofit organization, and you know, we were founded by, you know, two families that kind of came together, you know, 25 years ago, they had children that would, you know, be sort of on that level three, you know, really requiring substantial support. And at that time, they knew there was some evidence-based practices out there, but they didn't know but the schools at that time weren't knowledgeable and they weren't able to provide those sorts of supports. And so it was a new field at that time. And autism was relatively new. There wasn't as much known about it. So they literally came across, you know, the founding families, and none of them were educators per se. But they came around the kitchen table and they decided they were going to start a school. And I think that's what VIA is known for most. And they really had two, you know, founding principles. One was that all the services, the education was going to be evidence-based. So there was going to be research supporting the types of teaching techniques and methods and the types of clinical practices they were employing. And they were going to make certain that they really met families at their point of need. And they were going to look at that individual, that student, that child with autism, and really try to work through and address to the greatest extent possible that child's needs. And so from there, VIA started as a very small, tiny school in Charlottesville, and it's grown now to where we're serving 70 children. And as Hillary mentioned, we have students that come to us from 14 different school districts, all an hour around. You can draw an hour circle around Charlottesville, and these folks come. We're a day school, and we go year-round. Autism doesn't take the summer off, so we don't, and that's how we kind of say, you know, talk about it. But we've served, you know, many different school districts all within that radius and over time. And the way folks come to our school is that our school district partners actually refer the children to us. It's not a private school in the sense of that you could just come and be here. We actually work with the schools and the parents to really determine if this is the best placement to get the child's needs met. And once they are placed here, the reality is that we have a very highly trained staff. So we've got folks who are special educators. We have registered behavioral technicians. We have behavior analysts. We have speech language pathologists. We have Hillary's a social worker. We have psychologists. We have folks on staff who really work, who are very knowledgeable in evidence-based practices. And they really work with our student population to really try to get the best and maximize the outcomes and the learning that happens here. The children, you know, the staff, we have really intense staff ratios. So what that means is you'll see it's almost a one-to-one model where the students, when they come, they have one instructor or teacher that's assigned to them. And of course, there are multiple teachers throughout the day. They change over time, but it's very throughout the day, they may only have one teacher teaching them, especially when they first start, so that they can really get that intensive instruction and education and the clinical, their clinical needs met, so that we can really do our best by the children that are our students. But we realized that that the school alone, not all students and children with autism need that level of intense service. And so what we then created a few years back was our outpatient behavioral health services. And our outpatient services there, we're serving some of those kids, some of who are on level three, but some who are level two, who really should be in their public schools. And they should academically, they're on the same, you know, they're doing okay. They're at grade level, but they're having challenges. And so whether that's socialization, whether that's depression, whether it's anxiety, whether it's but they're having some challenges. And so what we have and offer for those children is either in home or in our clinic. And folks can come into the clinic, or sometimes we'll send our therapists into the home, and they work with those children to really ensure that they're kind of working through some of the issues that they're experiencing as a result of their autism. We also offer in the outpatient behavioral service program early intensive behavior intervention services. And so this is like a preschool for those newly diagnosed children, and that's what it feels like when you go to see. But they're always using evidence-based practices. That's the common theme across all the programs we offer. And so they're delivering those early intensive behavior interventions to the children. We have a psychology team, and they are doing diagnosis and follow-up counseling and psychological services. So if folks don't know if they have autism, or if a family doesn't know if they have autism and they want to get a diagnosis, they can contact VIA. And they can meet with one of our psychologists who's trained to make that diagnosis or to determine if it's something else and then help support the family. And then we also have a unique aspect of the outpatient behavioral service program is we have our intensive school-based intervention team, which goes out and works with all of our public schools. And really, they've reached out across Virginia, and they're trying to build the school's ability to better serve these students. You know, what they do is they're really teaching the evidence-based practices that work to the school educators. And it's not the school's fault. The evidence base is constantly, we're always adding new things that we're learning, and there's new techniques or methods for teaching. And so often what we're doing is we're trying to help build building the local capacity so that children can stay in their public schools, they can get the supports they need, and they don't necessarily need to be referred to via a school program. So we have our school, we have our outpatient behavioral service, and then the final core service we offer is our adult service program. And there, you know, as I mentioned, that, you know, children don't necessarily outgrow their autism, and so they still need support, our adults, our younger adult with autism. But they, you know, our goal there for all the programs are to really try to help our folks live more independently, get jobs in our community, and to enjoy our community to the extent possible. So we offer our day support program. We offer consultation and collaboration out into the community. So we'll go out, we'll work with adults that are having challenges in the community. We'll work with their families to try to help provide some supports and provide some behavioral consultation. We do job coaching. And we've even started our new little micro enterprise called Viable Ventures. And that's kind of exciting. And this time of year, it's good to know about. This is our we employ folks who have some significant challenges who may not be employed elsewhere yet because they don't quite have the skills or their challenges are a bit extreme. But we can work with them here, and we ultimately pay them minimum wage. And they are building out this time of year in particular candles. And the profits from the candle sales go back into paying them, a paycheck. And what's nice about this is we're able to employ some adults who may not otherwise be employed, who have severe or profound autism. And they get to enjoy not only the paycheck, but the camaraderie of coming to work and the dignity of actually being able to make their own money and produce something that folks really value and appreciate. So a lot going on here.
Again, we are talking about autism with VIA, Ethan Long, President and CEO, and Hillary Nagel here as well, Admissions and Family Support Services Coordinator. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Plenty more to talk about and learn about. And hang tight. And thanks for being with us today, everybody. Hillary, let me ask you, because Ethan was telling us about the resources at VIA. But as he sort of touched on, VIA is its own place and provides a lot, but VIA can't provide everything. So there must be other resources that a family needs that other places, other organizations in the community provide. Correct?
Correct, yes. We're really lucky in this community. One of the things that's available, it's actually a partnership with VIA and the Therapeutic Parks and Recreation with City of Charlottesville that do a sibling support program. So it's offering support to siblings with a brother or sister who has any type of disability in the household. We're there to support those siblings. We also have every local jurisdiction in Virginia has a community service board, and that is a place that families can access for case management support, for accessing waiver services, which helps pay for services through funding. And again, that is free to access and available in any area throughout the state of Virginia. We also have a program called REACH, which is a crisis stabilization and also prevention services where they can come in and help provide some parent coaching for individuals that have a family member with mental health or developmental disabilities. And they're another resource that is out there. And I also like to plug in a wonderful partner in this community called Wild Rock, which has this beautiful outdoor playscape. There are very few places that families can safely take kids into the community, and this is designed all fenced in, the beauty by the mountains in the western part of Albemarle County, and they offer that as a resource for families to come and play and have fun together in a really safe outdoor way of connecting with one another. So again, those are some things that are really can be helpful for families. There's also, you know, quite a lot of different mental health organizations and private practitioners who support families.
Yeah.
So there's definitely things out there to help in our community.
Right. One other group that, just in case folks are looking for a kind of a parent-to-parent sort of support, or at least a network where maybe there's some questions that folks have that they want to just run by or learn or talk to other parents, there's the Charlottesville Regional Autism Action Group in here in town, and they go by CREG is their acronym, and that's a group you can find that also is really comprised of families and parents that are kind of on that journey and have, you know, in many cases lived it. And so I think, you know, that's a nice resource for folks to be aware of. And of course, you know, if folks suspect they have a young child with autism and they're entering the school system, you know, they should really be talking to their school systems about their concerns and reaching out and working with their school systems to the extent they can to try to better understand, you know, their child's needs and some of the challenges they may be experiencing.
That takes me to a question that I have. So, Ethan, you mentioned a young child and the public school system, but is COVID getting in the way of autism diagnosis or treatment and care? Families not going to the doctor to find out if their child, for diagnosis or for wellness follow-ups?
Yeah, I mean, Rick, I think there, you know, the data are yet to fully be appreciated yet, you know, in terms of diagnosis and people delaying, but we're seeing, you know, across healthcare, certainly that, you know, folks are delaying because of COVID, you know, doctors and dentist visits, and that's having having an impact. I know for us, many of our families, the reality is that for many of our families, they are doing the best. They have, unfortunately, there's an awful lot of wait list for services and for understanding if my child has this condition. So whether you go to the University of Virginia's Children's Hospital or you go through the, any sort of local healthcare provider, folks, to get a diagnosis at times can be challenging. And so I know our team has been diagnosing throughout COVID, and they've been trying to go online to do it to the extent they can. They've been bringing kids in as to the best they can. But I do think, you know, we're going to still, we have some time, we'll see some of the impacts fully of the whole COVID crisis. Hopefully we're getting past this a bit as we have more vaccines and more vaccinations and folks are back to sort of in-person learning. But I do imagine we're going to see some data that'll probably will show that you know, this, that folks have suffered a bit, and folks are getting a later start in terms of being identified and intervention services. The good news is for many younger children, you know, folks are, you know, kids are resilient, and the brain is you know, and kids can learn and get back to it. So earlier is better. But certainly I think the key is having evidence-based practices and using things that we know work with kids and research has demonstrated work with kids. And if we can start with using those teaching procedures and those kind of clinical techniques, that's where we're going to get the most bang for the buck. So, this COVID thing has kicked us all. It's been a tough one for all of us and certainly our families. But I'm hopeful that you know, as we get in the clear here, we'll be able to make up some gains that were lost.
Yeah, I was going to say, some of the families have shared, too, with so many of the mental health services being virtual, that that's actually been kind of a game changer. It's been really helpful for them to not have to travel to seek mental health support. So having those virtual services has really been very, very helpful for our families, and I would imagine other families as well, that can just access that much more quickly and less costly.
I wanted to follow up on... You were talking, they was mentioned about support in the community, and I ran across the phrase service cliff, where youth are becoming young adults, they're leaving school, there's a lack of support for those who are becoming 18 and older, 22 and older. Can you talk about that? Not necessarily, we've already mentioned some of the specific programs, but the challenges that families go through in this?
Sure. So I think if individuals are aging out of services at 18, families are really having to think about a lot of those transition planning and thinking about what's going to happen life after school, those school years after they've graduated. For many of the individuals we work with here at VIA, they do extend to that 21st year. But again, we're really working and planning on sort of what else is out there, because the landscape for adults looks very different. We haven't quite caught up with enough programs to really support, kind of as Ethan had laid out, all of those different levels. So we have families with just individuals with very, very diverse needs, and it takes our community to kind of creatively think about what are we missing and where are those gaps, and we're finding more and more gaps are existing for those individuals 22 and over. But it is one of those things that's really important that families have the opportunity to work with their school team in the public schools to really think about and plan and begin to look at what are the skills needed for individuals to be as independent as possible post 22 or post 18 for those graduating out in the public school if they're not staying on for a post-high kind of program. But it's something that we find we need to start those conversations early. So we here at VIA really encourage families to start that, thinking about that even at age 14. So we're beginning to help plan and think about what those support needs, what are the skill pieces that are needed to really, again, open up as many doors post 22. But I think, again, from a service delivery model, we just don't have enough to support all the different individual needs as individuals are aging into adulthood.
It's Hillary Nagel. She's Admissions and Family Support Services Coordinator at VIA. Ethan Long, President and CEO. I'm not sure who to ask, so Ethan, I'll start with you. Is there a difference between boys and girls in terms of autism and the autism spectrum disorder?
Yes. So it's really interesting, and there's some new, you know, traditionally it's been always thought that there was sort of like more boys, 4-to-1 was the ratio that was sort of given, you know, 4 boys for every 1 girl diagnosed with autism. But, you know, as we look at the severity of autism, the more severe folks, it seems like that those it sort of equals out a little more. So as you get to folks who have more severe challenges, it seems like that's a little more equal. And then there's some really neat research that's happening, and some of that's being led by folks at the University of Virginia on some of the differences in the ways girls present. And so some of the social some of the ways in which girls socially present may look differently than some of the way the boys present. And so as a result, we may not have a real accurate kind of count of some of the girls. And so we're, you know, there's some nice research that's happening now trying to look at some of those differences so that we can better distinguish, you know, girls that may actually have autism and may benefit from, you know, ultimately the goal is to diagnosing is to try to figure out then what's the best treatment or what's the best, you know, practice that we can employ to try to get the skills built that this individual is suffering, you know, that needs. And but there's some great research that's going on where we're really trying to better understand, you know, the differences between girls and boys and how they may present with autism.
The 25th anniversary for VIA is coming up. Are there anything special happening for that?
Well, we've been doing we had our ribbon cutting on our new Center for Adolescent and Adult Autism Services. And you know, Hillary talked a little bit about and you mentioned the autism services cliff. And that's right. It's like as you age out of the education system, the adult system is woefully unprepared for the number of children and students who are becoming, you know, young adults. There's just not the supports there. So it takes a village, and we do a lot of fundraising ultimately to be able to provide the supports to those folks, those young adults. And these folks can continue to be productive members of our society. They just need a little support. They need that that little bit of help so that they can learn the skills and continue to maintain the skills that gets them that job or gets them, you know, riding the bus independently and being able to live a little more independently. And so, you know, it's our 25th year. And we always appreciate anyone that wants to join the team and donate and be a part of some of our programs by making a donation at this time of year. And so you can go to viacenters.org, viacenters.org, to make your gift. We always appreciate that. And, you know, if folks are looking to kind of get involved or to one of the unique ways people can get involved is by actually going to shopviable.org, shopviable.org. And that's our Viable Ventures program. And we have adults now that are actually making candles, and they're beautifully, they smell great, they look great. And you can purchase some candles, and they make wonderful gifts for the holiday. And you can kind of, it's a gift that keeps on giving, because ultimately, the sales from those candles will go into helping us employ more adults with autism and more artisans who can create these candles and goods. And so that's another way folks can get involved and help and maybe get a gift out of it as well, or give a gift. So
we've got about 5 minutes left in the program today talking about autism. This doesn't seem like something that someone falls into the assistance and care and teaching that someone falls into easily. So, Hillary, what led you to working with families and individuals with autism?
So I have kind of a personal connection with a family member that would probably be classified kind of real mild on level one. And I really looked at just, again, the impact on the whole family system to support that individual. And so professionally, I was really looking and seeking out an opportunity to work for an organization in this community that's just really committed to a holistic approach to services for the whole family. So it's what keeps me at VIA, what drew me to VIA, just, again, this commitment of how exciting it is to work at a place where we're not only impacting that individual that comes to VIA, but that we're really helping that family system and that those skills are generalizing into the home and community. So for me, I'm a real systems person. So I love being in relationship with families. I like seeing the uniqueness of how this impacts families and there to really walk alongside and figure out what we can do to build the supports so that the whole family is supported in that process. So that's sort of my passion and my commitment to families in this community.
And Ethan, I'd like you to tell me your story, but I'd also like you to tell me the change in the cultural viewpoint of the autistic individual from when you first saw it to where it is now as we finish up the show.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I was 25, 30 years ago as an undergrad in college, I was going to be a political science major. And I had gone over to the Netherlands. I was studying EU integration. And I came back. I was at West Virginia University. And I came back and I needed a science class. And they said, you know, well, we got this class that's down. You were one of the last ones, but it's got a practicum, so it'll give you an extra credit. So I joined up, and we drove down 3 hours from Morgantown into sort of Crabapple Cove. And I remember going to the school, and, you know, they said, well, the special ed classroom, that's around the back in the trailer out back. So we go around back, and there's a little girl there that, you know, was sort of left to swing in her swings. She didn't – nobody was really interacting with her. And there was a boy that was about 14 years old. And I remember his name distinctly, Matt, and he had a helmet on, a hockey helmet. He was acting on his face from drooling on himself. He was left in the corner, just left alone there. And they had the helmet on him because they were worried about him hitting himself. And I went there, and I remember we started using these evidence-based practices, and we started teaching this little guy, Matt, to raise your hand if you want to take the helmet off, or if you want me to talk to you, you know, clap twice if you want me to stop. And all of a sudden it started to click, and he would come and he would smile. We could remove his helmet. He started learning. He was clapping. He was raising his hand. We were able to communicate with him, and then we could graph that, and we could see the progress that was actually being made for him. And that just blew my mind away. Like, I was totally hooked. And I'll tell you, I haven't looked back. I went off to grad school, got my doctorate. I ended up coming here to VIA. I met these great families in this community that's so supportive. And I can tell you that it's just such a rewarding profession to be able to really make a difference in somebody's life. And our direct care staff, I was meeting with somebody today, and we were talking, you know, the other day, this last week, and we were talking about, why do you do this? And she said, you know, it's because I love these students, and it's because I get to go to bat for them and make a real difference in their lives every day. So, you know, from my perspective, you know, one of the things that's so so great is that that evidence base has kept changing. We're able to get more out of our folks, and we're able to help more folks. And one of the things I would suggest to people that are listening, if you know someone that's trying to figure it out or wants a job or wants to think about if this is for them a career change or something they might get involved with, I can tell you that for the folks that are here, much like Hillary, it's a calling, and it's such a great, it can be such a rewarding experience. And so, and you know, at VIA we offer, you know, tuition reimbursement. We help people with getting that professional training so they can move on you know, I think it's just a very rewarding place to be, and would hope that if folks are interested in listening and they're thinking about a career or opportunity to see if this is up for them, we would invite you to please come and get on our website and join us.
Again, the Virginia Institute of Autism, our guests today, Ethan Long and Hillary Nagel. You can learn more about autism at viacenters.org. That's viacenters.org. You can learn more about the Institute, but there are also articles about autism and the school and all sorts of things that I found quite interesting. So check it out. I want to thank both guests for coming in today and teaching me and hopefully the listeners about really and sort of changing some stereotypes. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, everyone. See you back next Sunday. Santa will be in the studio. Take care.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.